On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we welcome back the Las Vegas Raiders Network, Sanjeet T, to go over everything with free agency, the initial 53-man roster, and all the surprises that happened there. Soto and I go over, is Derek Carr underrated or overrated? And of course, we go over all the biggest roster surprises as well. And we love that you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares. There he is! Caught! Touchdown!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is. He's Juan Soto. I'm RJ Clifford. Let's have some fun today.
Let's
just
do it.
12 days away until opening day, Allegiant Stadium, Monday Night Football, prime time. Ravens coming to town. First home game with fans. 12 days.
Thick. Engorged testicles right now. I am ready.
So tingly down in my plums right now.
Yeah, we're 12 days away. I'm Mr. Kenneth, Hall of Famer, Kenneth Michael Stabler.
Good man. Good man. That's a good
12 away. That's a great number to be away
right now. Less than 2 weeks. September 1st. We're recording this Wednesday, September 1st. It's September. That's when you start, like, the autumn wind is blowing into town. You can smell the grass clippings.
Go to my plums.
I can almost hear the echoes of, like, the jugs machine working in Las Vegas at training camp.
I can almost see the jugs in Las Vegas right now.
Oh, I saw some jugs in Las Vegas last week when I was there. Went to Little Darlings. Place has still got it. Always empty. It's a buyer's market at the Little Darlings Strip Club in Las Vegas. Little inside information for you guys there. It's always like a 3-to-1 stripper to guy ratio.
So here's the deal. If you got... There's a hierarchy, a tier of chicks that are just, okay, first off, daddy issues is a pretty much a given. I think every chick out there's got daddy issues, right? Mm-hmm. You got the recently fit, all right, because they still maybe have the big girl mentality. We all know, RJ, the big girls do more stuff.
Well, they're also, they're more willing to, like, lick whipped cream off of you because they're less concerned about calories, you know?
That's true.
They're not counting carbs the way some of those skinny bitches are.
Yeah. Dude, listen, big girls out there, don't trip. Your man Soto right here. I'm good with all y'all. All y'all. Big, small, short, little
big.
People, big, bigger. Big. I'm good. I'm good. But the number one thing, that's in a guy's favor is when there is more women than men, and that competition is
buyer's market.
Nah.
Yep.
That's the top shelf level right there. That's when a dude can, like, level up. A guy's walking around as a cleaned up six, normally walks around as a dirty three, and he can get himself a solid 8-9 just because there's just a bunch of chicks out there.
People who don't go to strip clubs are like, are these guys really going over their game plan and, like, coordinating going to a strip club?
I like to be prepared.
Like, well, look,
wherever I go,
you go to the Spearmint Rhino on, like, a fight night Saturday night, and it's like 50 dudes to every stripper. And it's like, oh, fuck, I got to wait forever. I got to pay premium. It's going to suck. You go to Little Darlings on a Friday evening, not even like a Tuesday morning, even like a Friday evening. Buyer's market, baby. Do what you want. Speaking of Las Vegas, did you see this mansion that Mark Davis is building just outside of Vegas?
I'm sneaking into that thing.
I thought it was like a practice facility or like the corporate headquarters attached to the stadium. It looks like a Death Star. Like it does not look like a home. Like looks like Allegiant Stadium. It's like, it looks like where, like, the Emperor would live next to the Death Star.
If Darth Vader ever made it to Earth and decided to, like, plant some roots, like, you know what?
Yeah.
I have tired myself of dominating the galaxy. I want to raise children and settle down.
I want to pay penny slots in Henderson, Nevada for the rest of my retirement.
He would go to Henderson, Nevada, and he would build something like this. Anyone out there who was wishing and hoping that Mark Davis would somehow sell the team, he ain't never doing it because he's building a Raider palace. He's never getting rid of the team, so don't even think about it. Don't even try to think about it. That's a Raiders house. It's a fucking 15,000 square foot mansion with a pool the size of fucking Wyoming.
$14 million. And I wonder if a house that looks like that, that Mark Davis lived in, like the owner of the Raiders lived in a house like that, does that up the resale value or lower the resale value? Because you've kind of, you've limited yourself, right? Like no Chargers, Broncos, or Chiefs fans going to want to buy it. But you got Raider fans that are like, wow, I might drop an extra, you know, 10% above listing for this bad boy.
Yeah, I think he's kind of narrowed himself down. He's
pigeonholed himself a little bit.
He's gonna be buried in that house.
It's gonna stay in the family for the rest of their days.
You think he's built in a mausoleum? He could be buried on site.
Probably. I mean,
look, or a cryo chamber
for it. Knowing him, he'll just like keep himself alive as long as possible, like his dad.
Yeah. Right.
Still calling the shots. Wow.
Just don't try to draft, to take over the draft.
Right. Track and field players only.
Yeah.
So you sent me this link and it was NFL's underrated and overrated players. And it was ESPN. And basically the title is NFL underrated and overrated players. Which players do the numbers and tape like more than perception? I thought, okay, how is he shitting on Derek Carr now? Is he one of the overrated guys? Is this what it is? Lo and behold, underrated QB1 of the silver and black, Derek Carr, the Las Vegas Raiders.
Yeah.
I can't believe you sent this. Is this a trap? Are you like lured me into like a false sense of security so you can bash him halfway through this segment? Like what's going on here, Soto? I'm very confused.
I really tried to be objective when I say things. Mm-hmm. It's not because I'm trying to shit on somebody or have a personal thing against. I don't know any of these people personally. It's what I see on the field and what I try to take my Raider hat off when looking at production and looking at player evaluation. Mm-hmm. Because I want what everyone wants in this team. I want us to have the best players, the best team. And you can't wish somebody to be better than they are, right?
Yeah.
Although Derek Carr isn't a superstar, he's not a scrub either. He's not a bad player. He's not an average player. Like I said before, mm-hmm. he's an above average, good starting quarterback in the league. Now, being a good starting quarterback in the league means you're a pretty damn good quarterback overall, because a lot of teams have average to below average quarterback starting on their team. So that's been my stance from day one. And I sent this to you for your attention so you could take a look at it and maybe have a little jerk off material. And I wanted to make sure that I came across as a big J journalist here.
So the facts around Derek Carr have been made abundantly clear. And throughout the entire course of this is our 44th episode of the Autumn Windbags. I've been trying, right? We're flying. We got to do something special for 50. Throughout the entire course.
Strippers.
We'll do an at location shot at the at Little Darlings. We'll broadcast from like the VIP room. Done.
Put the call in.
But my biggest problem with Derek Carr criticism, not the criticism, there's plenty to criticize Derek Carr about. There's he's not perfect. And and even the very, very best player on our team, I want to get better and see what their problems are, right? Darren Waller is the best player on our team. He can work on his downfield blocking. It could get a little better. Like
I was a little lost sometimes out there.
Yeah, like he's not, you know, that could be you'd expect a tight end like dealing with like cornerbacks downfield that he'd be able to handle them no problem. Not always the case. Anyway, not that there's not plenty of Derek Carr criticism. It's that his criticism was always wrong. It was incorrect criticism. He can't win. Well, yeah, the defense is atrocious. And when people just lazily blame or credit whatever's going on with the Raiders on Derek Carr. And the opening paragraph is my best example. Again, I always give you shit, Soto. Like in 2016, when we were kicking ass and going to the playoffs, I didn't hear you complaining about Derek Carr. We go 8-8 and you do 7-9. You do complain about Derek Carr.
Can I address that really quick?
Go back in time and not say that anymore?
Can I address that right now?
Please.
My main concern with Carr from 2016 is that was his year three season, right? His third season. That's the one that where young quarterbacks usually either they get it or they don't, right? They click. Year three is the one that they're going to be like, this is what you can see in him. It's just the mass regression from then, for not wins and losses, from his play specifically. That's been my thing. It took him a long arc to get back up to where he was already 5 years ago. that's been my criticism with him. And a lot of it has to do with coaching changes and personnel. Also, a lot of that has to do with him regressing in his in the things that made him who he was back then, which is pushing the ball down the field more, which is taking chances when they're needed to be taken. Don't throw a 2 yard flat when you need 12 yards, you know? And these are things that he got used to doing. And this is a criticism, even with people who are car backers, who are blind car backers, that, he does check down a lot. And a lot of times, you know, you got to make the play yourself. And that's been my criticism. That's why I didn't criticize him until the 16, because that was the year everyone was saying, hey, this is his third year in the league. Let's see a big jump. Let's see what we really have. And then since from then until last year, his place. Now I'm trying to separate his play from the record, but his play regressed from that year on until last year.
He's improved the last 3 years under Gruden. So the first year with Gruden was bad.
He wasn't
got better the next season and better the next season.
He's improved. Where he was in 16. Okay. He wasn't where he was in 16.
No, he's better. That's my point. So look, this is what Walter had to say on the on ESPN. There has been a strange inverse relationship between Carr's reputation and his quarterback ranking. Back in 2016, Carr actually received MVP votes as he led the Raiders to the playoffs. Like, we remember, he was third in MVP voting.
No, he wasn't.
He was up there at certain points.
He wasn't. He wasn't even in the top five.
Yes, he was.
Let's be real. Let's be real.
Yes, he was.
Show me then.
I'll find it.
He wasn't. He wasn't. And he was in MVP votes in 2016. No, I just want to be real about this, RJ, because you're throwing stuff out there and it's not factual. He was not in the top five in MVP voting. He received a few MVP votes.
I think at a specific certain point in time, he was, right? Like, he wasn't in there consistently. Anyway.
At a specific point in time in life, I was a slim trim 170. Yeah, I was in seventh grade. But, let's be factual about this stuff here. He didn't finish the season
No, no, no.
He got two MVP
completely,
votes.
Completely. Okay, that's exactly my point. He got hurt and lost all his votes. Before that, that's what I'm saying. He was at one point third when he was healthy and playing. At the end of the season, when the voting was done, he was injured and not playing anymore. Of course, no one voted for him. Although I would argue he should have gotten more MVP votes because we saw what the Raiders were like without him.
He missed one game, dude. He missed one game and a part of another game.
No, he missed two games. The last game of the regular season and the playoffs.
The playoffs don't go into the MVP voting.
Correct. But my point is, in hindsight, that should have given him more MVP votes because we saw how the Raiders were complete trash.
Let's just look at it for what it was.
He wasn't at one point. At one point, he was three. End of the season, he wasn't. Okay. Long story short, the general gist is we can all agree in 2016, no one was saying Derek Carr's the problem and holding this team back, right? Nobody was saying that. Regardless of how good you thought he was, everyone was jumping all over Derek Carr's. This is great, great quarterback. And he's leading the Raiders, best quarterback they had forever. And yet that season, he's only 16th in quarterback rating. This last season, he has better statistically in almost every major category and 11th in quarterback rating. And we still have people saying Derek Carr's the problem. We got to get rid of him. We're not going to be able to win a Super Bowl with him. That's always been my problem with the Derek Carr criticism, is he's so many critics connect how the Raiders are doing to how they think Derek Carr is doing. Like, those are the two things together. 2016, the team's doing well. No criticism, Derek Carr. 2019, 2020, we fall apart late. That's all Derek Carr's fault. We got to get rid of him. That is my biggest problem with Derek Carr criticism, is it's just completely attached to the team. Now, as a quarterback, you're going to be critiqued more than any other player. Absolutely. I think that's fair. Derek Carr should shoulder not 1/53rd of the blame, right? Not him and the third string, tight end don't share the same amount of blame. But when you have literally the worst defense in Raiders history, a defense that gave up more points than any other team in Raiders history, how much of that can you blame Derek Carr when statistically he played the best season of his life? That is my point. And that is my biggest criticism, is people put the incorrect blame on Derek Carr for blame that should go elsewhere.
No, I agree with that. That you can't overcome that bad of a defense unless you are a generational, once in a lifetime type of talent or having that type of season.
Has any quarterback been able to like go deep into the playoffs with the 30th?
Mahomes won a Super Bowl
with the 30th worst defense in football.
And Warner won a Super Bowl with the 32nd or 31st. Yeah. So they both had really bad defenses, but they were both able to win Super Bowls. And that's why I say you have to be a generational type talent to be able to do that. Now, although Carr is not a scrub, he's not average, he's above average, he's good, he's not that. Okay. So let's just say that up front. And I'm trying to be objective about this. What I'm saying is what the lay fan who doesn't take a deep look into to stats and someone's bearing on a game, they see those dynamic quarterbacks out there being the winners, the people, the quarterbacks that can overcome certain things. A shootout. These guys are going to go ahead and make things happen. Okay. The main thing that I want to take a look at and the issue that I think most Carr detractors have is that he's not that dynamic type of passer that he showed he can be earlier in his career. And you couple that with the team's struggles and teams who are successful having that dynamic style or type of quarterback. And they look at that and say, okay, well, he's not that dynamic type of quarterback. These other people, these other teams have dynamic, more dynamic quarterbacks. That's a problem. Now, I'm not saying that's the problem. I'm saying that he has some of those problems in his game right now. He doesn't push the ball, although he's doing better. He doesn't push the ball down the field as much as he needs to. He checks down a little bit too much. He's okay with punting at wrong times in the game when, you know, he's either his team's behind or he's, you know, the teams are coming back on him and he just, you know, you see starting the games with a bunch of three and outs to end the season, stuff like that. So there's a lot of stuff going into this. It's not as simple as Carr's got to go, Carr's the problem, because I don't feel that that's the case. There's things that he needs to improve on. And those things just happen to be what people see as winning quarterbacks do well. And Carr doesn't do that.
So how do you like your crow, Soto? Barbecued, deep fried, rotisserie? I want to make sure, like, I know you're going to have to eat crow here, but I want to make sure it's flavored. Do you like a dry rub or maybe a barbecue sauce?
I like a dry rub with a dip.
So I'm looking at an article right now. Derek Carr ties for third in MVP voting after an outstanding 2016 campaign. He finished third after getting injured. Third, tied for third with Ezekiel Elliott. Matt Ryan got 25 votes, won the MVP. Tom Brady was second with 10. Ezekiel Elliott, Derek Carr was six, tied for third. I was right. How would you like your crow? Because I'll prepare it any way you like.
I have here CBS Sports 2016 final MVP vote. Matt Ryan 1, Tom Brady 2, Aaron Rodgers 3, Ezekiel Elliott 4, Le'Veon Bell 5. So
I'm going with this. I'm going with my article. I think my article's right.
There you go. Handle it. I mean, I don't know what you want me to say. That's what I read.
I'm going with mine.
Okay.
So 2016, was that maybe like the year before? Does that make sense? It was the 2016 award, but it was for 2015.
I don't know.
That couldn't possibly be it, right?
But it says 2016 MVP.
Yeah.
No,
I think journalism has to eat crow.
People are fucking up left and right over here.
Although I will say, remember he won the Clutch Performer of the Year award, Derek Carr, that season. He's like, oh man, he can't be. He's not clutch anymore. Like, remember how clutch he was in 2016?
Yeah, because he was fucking taking chances and pushing the ball down. And that's also fucking Riverboat Ron, too.
Yeah, or Blackjack Del Rio.
Blackjack Del Rio, excuse me.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was just like, fuck it.
Going for two. My favorite meme is there's the four photos, and one of them is someone's got a blackjack can. It says 18, and Jack Del Rio says, hit me. And then it's a three, and it's him pumping his fist.
I miss the old Jacksonville days when he used to have that leather jacket. He used to push the sleeves up.
Yeah.
When it was getting a little cold and he had that, that's like totally stitched on, freaking like it's like one of those like just mafia style looking jackets.
But God, that was such a fun season.
God, that was great.
That was such a fun season, 2016.
Well, the thing is, too, is like
I saw it coming too. I knew it. I was like, we're gonna.
They won so many close games.
Yep.
They won so many close games. They were just like going for it, and you know, Carr just didn't know any better. Cooper, Crabtree just didn't know any better. You know, it's like, let's just fucking go out and play. You know. Well, yeah, one thing I want to look at too is this. Carr was what 16th that year around in QBR. Mm-hmm. He had his best statistical season of his career. And he's a fringe 10-11, fringe 10 QBR quarterback for the season. So, I mean, that just goes again to my point, is he's not that guy to be able to carry a team that has deficiencies. He needs to have not just a strong team around him. He needs to have specific things around him.
I wonder, I really truly wonder, and we're probably never going to answer this question, is John Gruden elevating Derek Carr or pushing him down? Because every single piece of data we have,
I say yes and yes.
When he's when he's just slinging the rock, he's one of the best in football. Like he's that article you just sent me is the second best quarterback rating and passes over 20 yards. Like he's literally like right behind.
And that's why I pound the table. Like, dude, he's holding himself back. Because look,
is that play calling or is that his choice?
It's both. That's what I'm saying. Both. I think it's both. Because if you really take a look at, like I've said it before, if you really take a look at this offense, it's not a true West Coast offense. There is stuff built in deep down the field almost every single play. And I'm sorry. I know that people say, well, those are designed to take the beam. And if it's covered, what are you supposed to do? Well, why don't you tell, you know, Josh Allen, oh, that guy's covered. Don't throw it.
Stephon Diggs is never covered. I think that's okay, the other part
of
it too.
You take Stephon Diggs or you take who our deep threat was and who would you rather have? Who was our matchup nightmare? Who was our matchup nightmare? Darren Waller?
Waller.
Okay. He doesn't run tight end routes. He runs receiver routes from the tight end position. And that's
he
one
runs,
of them.
He runs tight. He runs like a lot of overs and he runs tight end routes.
I really want to see. But I get you. I want to see how many snaps, passing snaps he took from the tight end spot or from a receiver spot last year. I really want to see that because I think to your question, is Gruden holding him down or Gruden elevating? I think he's doing both. I think Gruden is teaching Carr some things that he needed to know. He needed to learn when he was maybe a little bit more of a gunslinger. Mm-hmm. But he's also stifling him. And I think the balance, there needs to be more balance. And as we all know, Gruden isn't about balance. Gruden is about Gruden and his word and what he wants.
Gruden's about balance between run and pass, not about maximizing.
It's not all balance about best. What other people say and what he says. It's what he says. And that's about it.
He's got a system and he wants soldiers. That's it. All right. Coming up next. Sanjeet T is going to join us. Good friend of the show. Joins us now. All right, joining us now, friend of the show, dare I say best friend of the show, Sanjeet T, joining us now. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing really, really well. How are you guys doing?
Good, awesome. Good. It's an exciting time. So recording this Wednesday around noon, literally the roster is fluctuating by the second with the final 53 getting announced yesterday and then practice squad guys getting signed. We'll get into like all the nitty gritty, but when they announced the 53, there were some surprising cuts. There were some surprising signings. Like, what was your biggest takeaway when they announced the initial 53 yesterday?
Yeah. One of the things I felt right away is that I hate the rule in which if you have players that are hurt and you want to put them on the short-term IR, you have to keep them part of the 53.
On the roster.
And, you know, I almost feel like now, if you guys haven't seen, Carl Joseph is signed with the Steelers. The Steelers practice have squad, added right? him to their practice squad. I felt like the Raiders should have kept him around. Now, I don't know what the reasoning is. I'm sure we'll get, you know, that.
We play them week two.
Yeah.
Exactly, right? Exactly. So it'll be interesting to kind of see what happens there. But, like, even then, kind of how the roster shaped out. Like, we have 8 offensive linemen on the active roster. Is that enough offensive linemen? Like, what happens if we get two guards to go down? Yeah. What happens if we get two guards to go down? It happened last week, I believe, or last year against the Dolphins, I believe. We had two guards go down. What happens? What do the Raiders do?
Yeah,
can Alec Ingold play guard? Like, yeah, like we're screwed. Like that's what makes me that. And that's what's always like, that's why they call it the initial 53, because like you said, they've got to just, here's 53. And then we do our IR guys. Then we'll see where we are on the waiver wire. And then we'll see who we set up for the practice squad, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, like when I'm looking at like the initial 53 now, you're like, okay, 8 offensive linemen, all of our linebackers are hurt. Like this is kind of scary. We only got 5 wide receivers. They'll probably sign. I imagine they'll find a 6th in there. They also probably need a 4th tight end too, because you run a lot.
Don't be so fast about that 6th wide receiver. Cause Darren Waller basically is our X. He's our best X receiver. And he played a lot of X receiver last year. So don't be too sure on that 6th receiver.
Anyway, like there's definitely like obvious holes in our roster.
Yeah.
So I'm not like overly worried that we're going to go into Monday night against the Ravens with only 8 offensive linemen. I'm just super worried who that 9th and 10th lineman is. Yeah. If they're not even on the initial 53, how bad are they going to be? O-line depth is, I didn't realize it till now, probably my biggest concern now.
Yeah, well, so one of the things is we did sign 3 offensive linemen to the practice squad. Jimmy Morrissey, the center, rookie center, Lester Cotton, who's the 3rd-year player, and then Jeremiah Patasi, I think that's how you say his last name, which I'm actually surprised we brought him back, because I felt like he was not ready. I felt like he's at least a year or two away from being ready, but, you know, we'll see what happens there. And one of the interesting things is this year specifically, when game week comes around, you can activate 2 practice squad guys without having to cut them and have them go through the waiver wire. So we can always activate Jimmy Morrissey and Lester Cotton every single week, and we won't lose them. So we do have that option, even at receiver, right? You mentioned we have 5 guys right now. We brought back Dylan Stoner and DJ Turner. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to kind of see what happens. Plus, we're also going to get some of these players to go on short-term IR. We have 3 quarterbacks right now. I don't think we're going to go into week 1 with 3 quarterbacks. I kind of feel like John Gruden's going to use that Mariota sore knee excuse and go ahead and just list him as a short-term IR. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting. Very, very interesting what we end up doing when the Ravens week comes around.
Yeah, the quarterback's a weird situation, because you definitely don't want Peterman to be your second string quarterback. But Mariota gets hurt so much, you have to have an insurance policy for your insurance policy. It's like, exactly. This Mariota experience has been such a clusterfuck.
Yeah, I said it last week. Your backup quarterback needs to be 2 things. He needs to be steady and he needs to be tough. Because behind him, you have a Broncos situation where you have an ex-quarterback who plays receiver now going out there and taking snaps. Yep. So Mariota is not steady. He's flashy and he can have some lulls, and he's not durable. He's not especially durable. So it's a head scratcher. Going back to the offensive line, though, I'm not encouraged by having any of those players being called up on game day from the practice squad. Yep. Like you said, Morrissey's really not ready. Patasi really hasn't shown much. And Lester Cotton got abused by backups against the 49ers his last game. So that's not making me feel too much better about our offensive line depth. So maybe some of the guys around the league who were talking about our offensive line being an issue when we were telling them to shut the hell up, maybe they knew something that we didn't at the time, because that and linebacker is something that's like, I mean, we got 2 guys now that have never played linebacker in the NFL before, who are looking to get a lot of, you know, snaps with Morrow and Lee going to be gone for a little while. I mean, KJ Wright's still out there. That's someone that you got Perriman's going to come in and play. Is that something that you think about doing?
Yeah, I don't think the Raiders should get KJ Wright. The thing with KJ Wright is he's the same position that Tanner Mews plays, right? KJ Wright is a strong side linebacker. He lines up on the line of scrimmage, or at least a yard or 2 off the line of scrimmage, kind of what Tanner Mews has been doing. If you bring in KJ Wright and you think he's going to play middle linebacker for the Raiders, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. I think the Raiders brought in Denzel Perryman for that exact reason, right? You got Perryman, you have Kukowski. Those 2 guys will most likely be the middle linebackers. Max Richardson, the rookie who, you know, I've seen mixed opinions of him. I don't think he was great, right? I don't know if it was Raheem Mazur or someone else. I think stiff-armed him on one play, that's, and then he got trucked on another play. But I will say he still had a ton of tackles. He was still making good reads, and he is still just a rookie, right? He's going to get better, right? Raheem Mazur's a starter in the league, and he's a good running back. So I think if we needed, Max Richardson could be that 3rd middle linebacker if we needed him before a game. in terms of outside linebacker, outside of Corey Littleton, it is kind of scary because I like Jaden White. I like what I saw from him in preseason. I don't know if Diablo's ready. Like I don't think he's ready, to be honest. I watched him against the Niners. He had a very, very difficult time shedding blocks and getting off those blocks. So I am concerned at that spot specifically. And that too, like, is Corey Littleton going to be healthy? Like, will he be healthy come week one? And then will he be healthy when week five comes around? If Nicholas Morrow's not healthy, or if Jaden White's not healthy by then, what do the Raiders do?
Yeah, with Divine Diablo, like, I keep thinking he's better than he is because his name is so awesome. Divine Diablo. God, awesome, yeah, he's name. Ready. Throw him in there. Divine. How can a guy with that name not be ready to play football? Yeah, I'm with you. I was really looking forward to our depth this season, and yet right out of the gate, the injuries are already kind of piling up. You know, as much as John Gruden's a Barney buzzkill in the preseason, not playing anybody, like, you know, points like this, you're kind of glad that he didn't. Carl Joseph, I think, was the biggest, like, shock initially for not making the team. Partly because that was the first, like, that news broke first. Like, we kind of find out early about Carl Joseph. Like, whoa, that's shocking. But to me, the whole John Brown situation is what's I'm so flummoxed about. Like, he came in, like, what John Gruden and Derek Carr did for the career of Nelson Aguilar. Mm-hmm. He came in like, oh, that would be do a 1-year deal, make me a $22 million wide receiver somewhere else. Like, sign me up.
Yep.
But apparently he comes in, realizes he's going to be like the sixth receiver, asks for a release, and the Raiders give him, cost us, what, $1 million or something like that. But I don't understand that thought process. Like, when Aguilar came in, he wasn't the number one receiver either. He only got playing time because Ruggs didn't really play as well as he should. Brian Edwards kept getting hurt, didn't play as well as he should. And he was able to shine because you got to throw it to somebody other than Darren Waller. Yep. And that was that guy. Like, John Brown still could have done that. Like, I still thought John, like, I'm not 100%, like, we have no reason to believe Brian Edwards and Henry Ruggs are going to 100% be ready this season. We're hoping they are. They're making progress. You know, Derek Carr brings out the best in his receivers. So, like, I'm optimistic. But if I'm John Brown, like, are you thinking, like, there's no way I'm going to be able to beat these second-year players and be a starter, or these guys will never get hurt again? Like, I don't understand his thought process.
Yeah, it makes no sense, to be honest. Like, to me, it kind of seems like John Brown didn't want to have to compete. To me, it seems like he just wanted a starting job handed to him. At the same time, let's be honest, John Brown came into this when we signed him. He came in, and to me personally, I would say John Brown had every opportunity to be the Raiders' number one wide receiver, right? Maybe not in front of Ruggs, but he had the opportunity, and only that too because of the fact that Ruggs is the first round pick. But it's not anyone else's fault that Brian Edwards outperformed him in camp. Hunter Renfrow, Zay Jones, out of everybody, outperformed him in camp. Put the blame where it goes. Put that on John Brown. Don't blame somebody else for him not being able to win the job and only being the sixth wide receiver. At the same time, he didn't look explosive at all. Like, even when he played against the Niners, like, he was playing in the fourth quarter, I believe, against the Niners.
Yeah.
He should have been dominating those guys, right?
Yeah, 2 yards.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that too, like, what team's going to want to sign him? At least, you know, and again, I don't know exactly what his salary cap situation is. I don't know what he was going to make on the top of my head, but he might not play football this year, honestly, because how many teams at this point need a wide receiver? At the same time, how many teams won't have the cap to pay him, especially in this weird year, right, where the cap went down?
Well, he got paid, I think, $3.25 million, and he's not on the roster, which is what the fuck, number one. Yeah. So there's I think there's like a four big things that the whole John Brown saga here. Number one, he came in, he got outworked. I think everyone else outworked him. All the other people outworked him. He got outperformed, right? The other guys, not only did they outwork him, but they played. Like, if you get outworked as a veteran, okay, whatever, young guys, go ahead, outwork me. I'm still going to go out. And in the joint practices and the games when I have time, I'm going to go out and shine.
Yep.
There's that. And he just didn't take it well. He didn't rise to the challenge and say, you know what? You know, I can see these guys outworking me. Let me go ahead and match their work. Let me go ahead and do this. From all accounts, he just didn't do it.
Yep.
Not only so, you know, and I was telling RJ last week, Dylan Stoner was getting open against those backups. I don't know why John Brown wasn't getting open against those backups.
Yeah.
And those are, you know, you would put all that together. You want to pay a Dylan Stoner, you know, 700 grand, or you want to pay, you know, a portion of John Brown's $3.25 million that he's going to get paid this year. You know, it's so he didn't look particularly explosive. He got one catch for 2 yards against the same guy. It wasn't like he was, you know, Cook was throwing him the ball or whatever. It was Peterman throwing everyone the ball. So
the worst part of all this, we could have had Smoke and Stoner on the same wide receiver squad. Now we don't. Now we got one in practice squad and one's gone.
Yep.
Total shame.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy because I also look at it like, did John Gruden say something to John Brown like before he signed, like, hey, you're going to be the number one guy? And then did he feel a certain type of way that, hey, you know, maybe he lied to me? I heard some rumors about that. I don't know if any of that is true, that apparently John Gruden promised him. And you guys know that players have said stuff, that John Gruden tells players one thing and then he does another thing. And I don't know if that's the case with John Brown, but it is an interesting thought.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up.
It wouldn't surprise me.
We just talked about that on last week's show when The Athletic does their survey of all the agents, and one of them said exactly that. John Gruden tells players something and just tells them what they want to hear, and they go. It's like, okay, but if that's what gets you, if you're at the negotiation table and you're trying to sway John Brown to sign with the Raiders, maybe sign for a little less money, and you say, yeah, you can be our Nelson Aguilar. You could be our number one receiver. You can revitalize your career here. And you say that, and that gets the agent or the player to take a little less money or give you a better deal. Like, that's not malicious. That's just good business. And it's up to John Brown to be like, to not show up like it's a coronation. Like, he's still got to earn his spot like everyone else. And so, like, yeah, I have no issue, zero at all, if John Gruden like tells potential free agents, like, butters up the truth a little bit to get them to sign. And if they come here and realize, oh, it's not going to be all sunshine and rainbows. Yeah, no shit. It's an NFL team. Like, you were let go of your last team, right? Like, they didn't want you. Yep. You're going to have to earn your spot. And if you thought, well, nope, I'm just going to stroll into town, into Vegas, and they're all going to love me, and I'm going to be the number one guy after doing nothing, then c'est la vie, John Brown. Sorry.
Well, the thing is, it's what you say is not as important as what the receiver receives, what they understand. And you can say kind of a double meaning, like, you know what, you come in here and you show me who you've been in the past, and you're going to be our number one receiver. Well, to the receiver, he would say, oh, I'm going to come in here. I'm the same guy I've always been. I'm going to come in. I'm going to be the number one guy. Oh, he promised me I would be the number one guy, and now I don't even make the team. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's – you also have to take a look at it like that too.
Yeah, another thing that's interesting is John Brown, you know, I forget who the reporter was. I think it was Tom Pelissero. I don't know if I'm butchering his name, but I think he was the one that reported that John Brown asked for his release. It's like John Brown wasn't even going to make this roster. I don't know why he asked for his release. Like, I don't know if that was like a
trying to get the journal, like, hey, journalist, do me a favor, say that he asked for the release, so we don't
get the jump on it. You know, cut. Hey, look, I'm not gonna. It looks bad for me.
Yeah,
just go ahead and let me go now.
Exactly.
You can't fire me. I quit.
Exactly. But it's like he wasn't going to make the roster regardless. Another thing I do like about the fact that the Raiders cut him, and not even him, just Carl Joseph, is the fact that the Raiders are no longer messing around. You know, Carl Joseph's a starting football player in this league. And for the Raiders not to keep him on the roster, we have four safeties better than him. That says something about the Raiders, and the league should notice, right? Other players, other teams, agents, whatever, they should notice that Carl Joseph's, he's not good enough to be on the Raiders roster. John Brown's not good enough to be on the Raiders roster. And it has nothing to do with those individual players. We just have players that are better.
Yeah.
I think, especially defensively, Gus Bradley, I think he's just saying, this is what I want my guys to be able to do. This is what I need them to do in order for my scheme and the team to be successful.
Yep.
Although he may work well in other schemes, he didn't do what we needed him to do here.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, with Gillespie and Teamer looking good in the preseason.
Teamer looked really good.
Oh, he looked real good.
Yeah.
You know, I got the film from a friend of mine, and you know, without having the All-22 film, and in preseason NFL Game Pass, they don't put the All-22 film out for preseason. You do not have access to the All-22. And I had a friend give me the Raiders film, and I watched Teamer. Like, I just watched a full game just to focus on him. I spent like an hour and 20 minutes just walking every single one of his plays. He looked good, man. And I'm very happy that the Raiders kept him around. Before camp, he was a guy that I thought would just be cut. But, you know, once camp went along, after the first game, the second game, I thought, man, this guy has a real shot at making the roster. and playing, right? Like, I would argue he's the number three safety right now, ahead of Tyree Gillespie.
I agree with that. Tyree Gillespie had some brutal angles this last game, and I'm like, oof, Teamer's not going to make those mistakes. And if you're a backup, you don't need to make the big play. You just don't need to make the big mistake.
Absolutely, and that's such a big, big part, right, is you can give up a 15-yard gain, a 10-yard gain. Just don't give up a touchdown.
Not a 50-yard gain.
Yeah, not a 50-yard gain. Let the team drive downfield because, you know, the more plays they run, more chances it is that they're going to throw an interception or fumble or something happens for the defense.
And that's the Gus Bradley philosophy is, absolutely. Okay, we're gonna make you inch your way up because the more you're going to have to be disciplined. And as much as people like to bang on Carr, and I'm one of them for checking down so much, a lot of quarterbacks out there aren't as disciplined as Carr to be able to take that. And they want to push the ball even when it's not. And that's when a Gus Bradley team takes advantage.
Yeah. And, you know, that actually happened with the Seahawks on the Nate Hobbs interception. The Seahawks want to throw the ball deep. That's part of their philosophy, is getting vertical, getting downhill. And the thing is we kept forcing the quarterback into check down after check down after check down. He had a guy wide open in the flats. Like, he could have hit a guy. The guy would have picked up 15 yards. Instead, he threw it deep into triple coverage. The ball was kind of underthrown a little bit, but that's what Gus Bradley wants. And that's how you stop a team like the Chiefs, right? And maybe the Chargers, will see how they kind of run their offense this year. But we force teams to drive downfield. I don't know how that's going to work against a team like the Ravens, who might be willing to take those, you know, 4 or 5 yard gains. But with certain teams, it definitely is something that'll be an advantage for the Raiders.
Who is one thing that I,
go ahead.
All right. I'm going to go first. Who is the biggest surprise who made the 53 for you, Sanji?
The biggest surprise that made the 53. I don't know if I'm necessarily surprised with a Teamer making the 53. I kind of felt like I expected him to make the 53 after watching this film. Honestly, I didn't really have a bunch of surprises of people who made the 53. I would say I was more surprised with the cuts. I was more surprised with the Carl Joseph cut than I was with any of the guys that actually made the 53-man roster. Honestly, we kind of expected a lot of these guys to make the 53. And I would say this, I don't know what's going on with the quarterbacks yet, but I guess Nathan Peterman making the 53 is kind of surprising. Let's be honest, if we cut Nathan Peterman today,
no one's picking his ass up.
Who's going to pick him up? Who wants him? Outside of a team saying like, hey, come over here and teach us John Gruden's system, or give us some insight and some of his audibles and stuff like that. Who wants Nathan Peterman?
Yeah. Why is he on the practice squad? That's what I'm saying. It's not like someone's going to swoop him up. Like, why does Gruden give him $1 million every year to play 12 quarters in the preseason? Like, that's
because he wants to be right. And his name is John Gruden. That's why. He's said his praises. He said sung Peterman's praises way too much for him to eat crow and say, hey, you know what? He just didn't cut the mustard.
I will say one guy that surprised me was Darius Filon. Necessarily that he made the roster, but with his play. I would argue after Hankins and Gerald McCoy, Filon's the third best defensive tackle we have, at least from what I've seen on film.
Mine is Nick Bowers. That was the surprise to me. Only because not that he's not good. It's just like, all right, our tight end room's too deep. Like, who are they? They're not going to cut Derek Carrier. Like, come on, that's impossible. Yeah. Boy, did I look stupid. I literally tweeted that out when Nick Bowers made that touchdown on Saturday. I was like, damn, the Raiders tight end room is amazing. Like, you got Waller, obviously. Foster Moreau would be a starter on over half the teams. Derek Carrier's our best blocker. Nick Bowers just did that, and there's no way he's making the squad. 3 days later, lo and behold, Nick Bowers is there and Derek Carrier is cut. Like, again, not that I guess that what that tells me is, like, as good as a blocker as Carrier was, they want a more dynamic pass catcher.
Yeah.
That would be Nick Bowers. Like, that's the only thing I can think of about, like, why they would make that move.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I believe Nick Bowers, I don't know if he was with the Raiders last year, if we picked him up some point last year. But I believe we signed him like before the offseason even began. Like, we told him, we want you back with us. Instead of going somewhere else, another team picks you up, we want you with the Raiders. That too, like, I like Matt Bushman a ton, and I'm glad we brought him back to the practice squad. Mm-hmm. Matt Bushman's the rookie from BYU. He had more yards in his final year in college than did Noah Fant, and Noah Fant was a first-round pick. Not saying, you know, he'll be better than Fant, but the Raiders produce some good tight ends, man. I think John Gruden has a good eye for tight ends.
Yeah, Bowers is like a Foster Moreau light. He's not quite as polished as Moreau was coming out of college, because you know he had a better offense going from LSU, a better competition. But some of the way he moves, the way he moves after the catch, he makes these weird little moves that like same things Foster Moreau does that you wouldn't expect a guy that big to be able to make, and it just makes the defender look stupid. Yeah. And dude, that last touchdown was great. I want to throw a name out at you, and I've been following him since his college days, and he's recently released, Everson Griffin.
You know, that's interesting.
He'd be our third best defensive end.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right maybe. Off, sign yeah. right out. No, there's no maybe about it. He would be our third best defensive end.
Yeah.
You know, you have Solomon Thomas at the kind of the bottom of the pecking order of the defensive tackles. I don't see him making that big of an impact. He really didn't make that big of an impact in the preseason.
Yeah.
What do you think about switching the tables to five defensive ends and four D tackles? As opposed to right now, we have four defensive ends and five D tackles.
So we have five defensive ends and five defensive tackles.
Right. Kuntz.
Yeah. So that's an interesting point. I don't know if we have the cap to bring him in. And I will say this, you know, Carl Nassib, I believe his contract's guaranteed. I think he's making like $6 or $7 million this year. So we cannot move on from him. But no. I will say if we were able to move on from Carl Nassib, Nassib doesn't bring anything special, right? Like Nassib's maybe, I would say that Cleveland Farrell's probably a better pass rusher than Nassib. And Cleveland Farrell kind of struggles with pass rushing, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what Nassib brings for the Raiders. I think after this year, he's gone. And I don't know if we have the cap. Now, obviously, you know, like you can sign anyone, right? And then just guarantee money in the future.
Figure it out, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you can make it work. I just don't know how.
It's not really the Raiders' way. They're pretty disciplined about not getting in. They'll sign the wrong guys for too much money, but they don't, like, you know, rob Peter to pay Paul down the line. Yeah, they're not. They don't do that.
Another thing is like, I almost feel like Mike Mayock and John Gruden want Cleveland Farrell to work. And then getting someone like Griffin, you're kind of pushing Cleveland Farrell even further back. They don't want Farrell to be a bust, even though that's kind of what it's trending towards. Even though he can be a good football player, he is trending towards a bust, right? He's not worth the fourth overall pick. But I feel like Mike Mayock and Gruden are going to give him every opportunity. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I don't think we're going to get Griffin. I would love it. It'd be great for the defense because let's face it, the biggest pickup of this offseason outside of Gus Bradley is Gerald McCoy. Right, Jerry McCoy dominated the San Francisco 49ers. He dominated them. And the thing is, you know, McCoy is a potential future Hall of Fame football player. He has, 60 sacks in the league from the defensive tackle spot? Like, that's not typical. Like, defensive tackles, like, Solomon Thomas has, three sacks his whole entire career. He's, in his fifth year or something, right? And McCoy has 60 career sacks. I think 59 and a half or something like that. Again, I think this Raiders defensive line is going to be different this year. I really think it's going to be different.
Yeah, I said it when they signed him. I said if he's anything like his last healthy year with the Panthers, he's going to be our best D tackle and maybe even our best defensive lineman because he got hurt 1 year. His only time he'd been hurt his entire career, it happens. Yep. I said it last week. Guys get hurt, man, it happens. It doesn't mean he's washed up. Yeah. He came back in shape. He came back and he was every single snap. He was in the backfield. Absolutely. Every single one. And as much as we like to have these edge rushers, a lot of these guys kick inside on passing downs. And the pressure now is up the middle. It's getting in the quarterback's face. And that's where you see a lot of these pass rushers being able to do that. So if McCoy, if he can do that with us, oh man, that's going to be a big boost.
Yeah, and who do you double team now? Like, Jared McCoy, you can't block him one-on-one. Like, you have to slide towards him. You have to chip. You have to get something with him. Jonathan Hankins doesn't bring a lot pass rushing-wise, but Jonathan Hankins can push someone back, right? Like, he'll collapse the pocket. You can't – do you double Unique? Do you double Crosby? Like, where's the double coming, right? I think the Raiders' defensive line is – and again, I'm a little bit more optimistic. I think we're going to have a top 10 defensive line unit.
I spent this entire offseason like reminding myself, like, all right, Gus Bradley's in. We should use this draft pick. We signed this free agent. Yannick Ngakoue is here. I'm just like, all right, it's still the Raiders defense. It's always going to suck. Just have an average suck. Just be a normal sucky defense and I'll be happy, right? Be the 20th best defense in football. I'll be happy. you might be onto something, man, with this defensive line. And that's exactly what how every Gus Bradley defense flourishes, is a really, really good defensive line, gets pressure without blitzing, and give your let your DBs just like hang back and, you know, let some loose balls come your way and get some picks. Like that's the foundation of what Gus Bradley's trying to do. And again, tempering the expectations, but it looks like he's on his way.
We're all wondering about that the last time you were on too. How is Bradley going to get pressure with the four that we have?
Yeah.
Interior, who we can, and then we got McCoy, and we didn't know what we had in McCoy, because the last time we saw him on the field, he was getting carted off, and it's, you know, what was it, a quad injury or something like that?
Yeah, I think it was a quad injury.
So yeah, he looked really good, and it's now it's starting to fall into place.
Yeah, and you know, another interesting thing is I talked to a beat writer that is at camp. He watches every single practice. I talked to him about the joint practice against the Rams. Keep in mind, Gerald McCoy did not play. And this guy told me that the Raiders defense got the best of the Rams offense. Like, if it was a full game, the Raiders would have won, because their defense was beating the Rams first string. The Raiders were winning. And that was without Gerald McCoy. And that was with Nick Morrow getting hurt. And we really didn't have a replacement for him at that time. I think Gus Bradley's he's going to do something different for this defense. And people always talk about how, you know, his defense is a cover three every single play. I've watched all the plays from the defensive side of the ball, and it's not just a cover three. Oh. Like, you know, on one play, he'll have the slot corner drop back 4 yards. On the next play, he'll drop back 12 yards. And then, you know, just that right away is going to confuse the offense. And then he'll have one side of the field playing man-to-man coverage and the other side playing like a cover two, right? Or he'll mix it up, and it's not just a cover three. He might show a cover three, but he'll run something completely different once the play actually starts.
Yeah, it's the cover three shell look is what he has.
Yeah.
But what they run underneath is it varies. And yeah, that's why I noticed that too, is, you know, like Robertson, when he dropped back maybe like 4 or 5 yards, the linebackers rotated and floated the other direction. And it's like, you had that almost like a shell, a shallow zone underneath. And the quarterback's like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
I didn't see any of that happening in the pre-snap look. So it's encouraging. It's encouraging, yeah, for sure. And that was a more vanilla look defense that we're going to get on Sundays or Monday night. Yeah. And I mean, Mr. Jackson's been known to float a couple balls here and there when he's not really too sure where to go, when he's getting a lot of pressure, and hopefully we can keep him corralled. But yeah, and it's looking good for us because they don't have a running back in Baltimore.
No, anymore. You know what's crazy is, do you guys think the Ravens are better this year or worse this year?
Well, with no Dobbins, I think they're not as good offensively. But
they also lost their – they also traded away Orlando Brown Jr. They lost two pass rushers, right? I think they lost Matt Judon to the Patriots. Yeah. And then they lost, obviously, Yannick to the Raiders. And I know they took a pass rush in the first round, but that's a rookie pass rusher, right? He's going to be going up against Colton Miller. At the same time, he'll go up against Alex Leatherwood. I think the Ravens are a worse team this year, man. I don't think they're better. I think our defensive line is going to kick their offense line's ass. And I think that's going to be the difference in the game.
Yeah, that defensive line with McCoy is something special. I used to say that Darren Waller's, you know, $7 million a year contract was the best value in football, definitely the best value on the Raiders.
McCoy,
dude. McCoy at $1.25
million.
Crazy. $1.25 million.
If he plays well.
Highway robbery.
Absolutely. Week seven, wow. Week eight. Hey, Gerald, please, Mr. McCoy, sit down. Yeah. We're thinking about the next couple of years. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think he's 32, right? I believe he's 32.
Yeah, he's 32.
33.
Yeah.
I mean, he still has a couple of years left. He's a defensive lineman. He's not a running back. He's not a wide receiver, right?
He's still down. Quick, man. He's quick. Still super quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was compared to Warren Sapp coming out of college. Mm-hmm. And God damn, did he look like Warren Sapp last week?
He was explosive, man. And it's not just like he played against backups. He beat the Niners first stringers too.
He played the entire game, and he was the best defensive player. He was the best defensive player on
lived in that backfield. Yeah. You brought up running backs. What the hell is our running back room going to look like throughout this season? Because you got obviously Josh Jacobs, Kenyon Drake. And then the number three or four guy, it's Jalen Richard, injured. I still am shocked he's still on the roster this long, considering he's making more than the starting running back, which And not just like the locker room loves him, great pass blocker, all those things.
Return guy.
Yeah, return guy. He's I don't want to see him go, but like Trey Regis ran pretty decent this preseason, super cheap. Like, what do you think is going to happen there with that third or fourth spot in the running back room?
So, yeah, I think short term, I think Rashard hits the short term IR. He'll be out 3 to 6 weeks. We'll see when he's healthy to come back. And then I think Trey Regis ends up being the number three running back. I think BJ Emmons, who also signed to the practice squad, I think he'll stay on the practice squad. He didn't look as explosive as Regis. But I am surprised as well. I don't know. I don't see the point of bringing back Jalen Rashard. At the same time, what does Jalen Rashard bring for the Raiders? Like, he's a good pass blocker, which I'll give him. But Trey Regis showed that he can pass block as well. Trey Regis is cheaper. Now, I would say the only reason the Raiders, or I would say a potential for the reason why the Raiders have kept him around, maybe they can't cut him because he's hurt. Maybe he has something in his contract. Maybe they'd have to pay him more money or something. I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is as to why they kept him around, but I think the Raiders should move on from him. I think, you know, Josh and Kenyon Drake are going to get most of the touches, most of the snaps. Even last year, how much did Rashard really play? He played like 4 or 5 snaps a game, if that.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they were going to trade him, they would have done it already too, you know? Like, I don't know. Maybe they're waiting until like, you know, early, like as the season rolls on and some team's running back room gets injury after injury and they move on from him and trade him there, something like that. I don't know. That's just what I'm wondering is how much value do you have in a $3.5 million third string running back?
Yeah.
Although he is good, right?
He is still a good football player for sure. That's a good point. I didn't really think about it. Maybe the Raiders do want to trade him. The Raiders could always eat $2 million of his cap and then trade him. So a team gets a friendly running, but team friendly contracted running back that can pass block. And I think that's one thing that, you know, we can't underestimate. Pass blocking on third downs is such an important part. Running backs don't want to pass block, right? Running backs don't want to take a linebacker coming full speed at them or a defensive end. That's not what they want to do, but maybe he brings a little bit, because let's face it, right? You can get a running back from college right now, any running back, and you can put them in and chances are they'll be a pretty good running back. Yeah. There's a lot of free agent running backs out there. Obviously, I would say the difference between Rashard is he's a good pass blocker. He's a good third down running back from pass blocking and potentially making catches and, you know, picking up some yards.
Calling it right now, Monday Night Football. Season opener for the Raiders. The Raiders hold the Ravens to 60 yards rushing. Tuesday, they trade for Jalen Rashard to up the running back room. That's what I'm hoping for right there.
That would be crazy. I should have looked into it. I don't know if the Ravens picked up any running backs.
I don't think so. I looked at that.
So who are they rolling with? Is it Gus Edwards?
And then Gus Edwards is like the main guy. Okay. Let me take a look real quick.
Gus Edwards, a big guy too. Like he's a power back.
He's steady, but he's not quick and he's not explosive.
He's not explosive. That's the thing. So I don't know, man. I say it, like, even then, like, who do the Ravens have from the receiving group, right? Like, what receiver is going to beat, like, Mark, what is it? Hollywood Brown. And then I think they picked up Sammy Watkins as well. Are those guys going to beat, you know, Mullen and Hayward, and are they going to be able to get deep? It's going to be interesting, man.
The thing is, against the Bradley defense, you need to be precise as a route runner to get open. Yeah. If you're just going to be a speed burner guy, you're not going to get open. You're not going to find hole. You're not going to be able to set up the defense the way you need to in order to be able to fool them. Tyson Williams, a running back. What else we got here?
So the covers are pretty bare.
Pretty bare, man. I'm not seeing too much
give
here.
Give us a fifth rounder.
Justice Hill.
Hill's a good running back. I think he was a rookie last year. I think he's from Oklahoma. I don't know. It's probably my memory.
Yeah, kind of, that's it.
He's a pretty good running back. I think Hill would be the guy that would take over for the Ravens. He was pretty good last year too. I think was it Dobbins that was a rookie last year? I think Hill's going to be a good running back. I think he'll be the one to get. If you're in fantasy football, I think Hill's the guy.
How concerned are you, if at all, or have you even thought about all these executives leaving the Raiders? And it's just like this, the silence, there's a report that there's an IRS issue. It's like, part of me wants to say like, okay, that's the front office. That has nothing to do with what's on the field, but an organization runs from the top down. Right. That's, I don't know. How much have you been following that? And how much is that like an issue with you?
Yeah. So when it first happened, so when Bedane first announced his, you know, I'm going to step away from the team, I didn't think much of it, But then we had a couple. We had the controller of the team. We had the who else was
CFO.
It? The CFO. But it was people in the finance, you know, realm of things. And if you guys don't know, I went to school for accounting. I got my bachelor's degree in accounting as well as finance. I double majored. So I know all about that industry. I work in that industry as well. So when I see a controller resigning, a CFO, to me, and the second it happened, I have a Slack chat with the staff members from the Las Vegas Chronicle. The first thing I told them is there's probably an accounting issue. There's probably fraud, something around that. So when it actually got announced, that's exactly what it was. It made perfect sense, right? The controller is a certified CPA, right? Chances are something happened there. And if you're a CPA, you're not going to commit fraud, right? You would lose your CPA license. That's so hard to get already. You spend years getting that. So I don't think it's fraud. I think more likely, you know, I heard something about the fact that they overpaid taxes, which is fine. You know, just let the IRS know and get your money back. And I don't know how long that process takes, but it makes sense that that's why they stepped away. Something related to that. And I would say it's not a big deal. It does not impact us at all. Some people are saying, oh, Mark Davis is going broke, but here he is buying the Aces. He's buying a new house, right?
$14 million house.
Yeah, I don't think he's going broke. I think he's perfectly fine. And which is interesting because they also said that's why we got rid of Rodney Hudson and Gabe Jackson, is because Mark Davis couldn't afford it from a cash perspective. I don't think that's the case, man.
Did you send your resume to the Raiders when you found out all these finance jobs are open?
I should have, but I don't think I can make that move to Vegas at the moment.
Ah, oh, okay.
All
right, Sanjeet, this is awesome. I'm sure you're gonna want to like get back into the stream of things, because literally like as this show happened, I'm sure moves got made, practice squad changed, people are moving around. Very fun time. Sanjeet, one of the hardest working guys.
Thanks, Sanjeet.
Covering the Raiders. Thanks for coming on, man. We really appreciate it.
I really appreciate both you guys having me on. It's always fun, and I look forward. Hit me up more often, man. I work from home, so I'll come on, you know, every month, twice a month, whatever you guys need, man. I really enjoy talking to you guys. You guys do a great
job. Careful
great
what job. You wish for. We're going to start showing up at your house. Being like, all right, we're moving in. We're doing the podcast here.
So you see Sanjeet's face, and then you see me coming in. Hey, what's up, RJ?
Thank you, Sanjeet T. Again, like,
man.
Probably the best friend of the show. Good old Sanjeet. Like, we've had some awesome guests that I like. You know, we're lucky that we get to work with people we like. Sanjeet, he's an honorary windbag.
I like Sanjeet more than I like you.
I like Sanjeet more than like me. Exactly. I'm with you 100%.
That's true.
So that's it for now, the initial 53. Mike Mayock and John Gruden still got a lot of work ahead of them, though.
No, I have a weird John Gruden story. I don't know if I ever told you. I don't think I've ever told it on the air. So I'm
all ears. Let me slide my butt to the edge of my seat.
Get in there. Hey, this story gets you the whole seat, but you're only going to need the edge. So I used to have a company that we had an office in Culver City, and we also had an office in Port St. Richey. It was a Tampa area, right? Mm-hmm. So I used to be in Tampa area like 3 weeks, and then I'd be home for a month, and I'd be gone for 3 weeks, right? Kind of like going back and forth. So Tampa, for people who don't know, they're like a really big city for
strip clubs.
Well, that too. Mons Venus, Odyssey, 2001, love it. They have a lot of craft. Three things: strip clubs, craft breweries, and they have a lot of fledgling trial chain restaurants. Like companies that own like Outback and Hooters, they'll do a bunch of different ones in like strip malls just to see how they do.
Interesting. So the petri dish for like fast casual.
Yeah. So there was this one place. It was like a Hooters knockoff. I forgot what it was fucking called, but I got so fucked up because they had like the local craft breweries there, and I was just getting drinking and like, this is like Coors Light. Like, and it was like way more than Coors Light. And I don't really drink anyway. I got super fucked up. So, we go into the car, and I'm like kind of like in the front seat, just kind of slumped over. And like the person driving was a friend of mine, and he hits the brakes really hard. And I fucking jerk up like, oh, what the hell, man? I fucking neck and shit. What the hell happened? And he's like, dude, I almost ran over John Gruden. And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I almost ran over John Gruden. He's like, where is he? He's like, he got into that car right there. I look over And it's like, you know, some type of sports car. It was raining and like 90 degrees outside at night, so I really couldn't tell. But the fucking car just peeled off, like fishtail, took off. And I'm like, that was John Gruden. He's like, yeah, I almost hit him. I'm like, what happened? I said, I couldn't see shit. Because I don't know if anyone had ever been to Tampa, but it rains really hard at night a lot, and it's still really hot. It's really gross, it's humid, and you can see the steam coming up from the street and shit. It's really bad. But when it happens, it's really hard to see. Like, your peripheral without lights, it's hard to see.
Yeah.
So he's driving in this little, you know, strip mall area, and probably a little bit faster than he needed to. And he sees a guy walking, and the guy just stops, and that's when we broke. And he looks up, and he said, John Gruden just looked up like this. Gave one of these, mocked the other four steps to his car, and fucking peeled out. And I'm like, dude, we almost killed John Gruden.
What year was this?
This was 2012, 2000.
Okay.
2011, 11, something like that. 13, maybe. No, I was already married, so 13.
So Monday Night Football, John Gruden.
Yes, like the early part of Monday Night Football. Early,
John Gruden. Right when we started.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh my God, dude, it was. I'm like, hey, but at the time. He was just what he was. What he wasn't really established on Monday Night Football, and yeah. He was an ex-Raider who beat the Raiders. I was like, you know what? Fuck him. Should have ran him over.
Lo and behold, almost 10 years later, here we are.
Right, back out, kissing his ass.
What's he gonna do? Raiders, what a Windex.
Let's do it.
Zoo Devil. Does to Zoo Devil.
Zoo
Devil. I like keeping the starters out for preseason. I would literally puke for 24 hours straight if, say, Waller had played against the 49ers and tore his ACL. I get the idea that you want to start strong and playing the preseason helps that, but the risk versus reward is too much. I really wonder what if someone has done like the study of which teams started how or, you know, what percentage starters played in preseason versus how they did in the season. You know what I mean? Like teams that play 90% of their starters for four quarters a preseason do 13% better in the regular season, right? Like, how is that? How does like some brainiac with a pocket protector not have that out there yet?
Yeah. I mean, it's the starters is the obvious thing, but ultimately in previous years, the starters didn't really play a lot in preseason anyway. I think with the depth issues that teams are facing, and the fact that just from the naked eye, I feel that a lot more starters are getting hurt, especially earlier in the year, because they're not really used to the contact that much.
Yeah.
And so I think it's more for the backups, because right now you're seeing maybe a couple of younger guys play a couple snaps here and there, maybe a first quarter. But then you see the backups play, and then you see a lot more of the third string, undrafted guys coming in and playing the majority of the second halves now than in previous years. Usually the backups would have to take the rest of the game, and then maybe the last couple drives of the fourth quarter, you would see, you know, the third stringers and the guys who really aren't going to make the team just to see what they have. But now it's shifted a little bit. But, you know, I agree, especially now that joint practices are a practice that more teams are doing. I think everyone's doing with joint practices now.
Guareb? *, GWAREB. Weird names today. Careful what you wish for. But speaking about Dobbins of the Raiders, of the Ravens, the Raiders once again are only one or two more starter injuries away from a disaster. And if that happens, I'm done. The Raiders have to get rid of some very important players and coaches. And I'm not talking about anyone on the defensive side. The Raiders are the only team that has to overcome so many obstacles like the NFL, refs, the media, bad draft picks, bad plays, calls, injuries, young guys, inconsistencies, COVID, and so much more every year. I wonder who are the list of the most disastrous injuries the Raiders can have. Carr number one, clearly.
Carr, Waller.
Waller two.
Colton Miller.
Colton.
Those are probably the biggest ones. I think on defense.
Ngakoue.
That would really suck because that really frees up a lot of people.
Corey Littleton, just because we're already so injured there. And the depth.
Well, Corey Littleton, he's been proven, maybe not last year, but his career as being the leader of the linebacking core. Yeah, those are pretty much the top ones. But it's like that. Like you name a team that can lose their top receiver or their top or their quarterback or their left tackle. It's the same with any team.
Fang Vu. I've never seen someone that is a fan of a team yet hates pretty much the whole team, players, coaches, GM, as much as Soto does. Almost every episode, all I hear is this guy just poo-poo on his team. I hardly hear any sort of compliments coming from this guy. And if there is one, it would most likely come with a critique. Why are you such a negative Nancy there, Soto?
I addressed it earlier, and I think I addressed it last week. I'm trying to be objective, and I think a lot of Raider fans, because we're so passionate, we feel anything other than blind faith and 100% rah-rah as being against, and that's not the case. It's I am a Raider fan. I've been a Raider fan my entire life. I've never cheered for another team, even if it's the Chiefs need to beat the Broncos. I would not cheer for the Chiefs. I wouldn't give a fuck. I want them both to just burn in hell. So I don't know.
It's like when AJ Hawk came on our show 2 weeks ago. He's talking about coaching his son. Like, he's harder on his son than any of the other players, right? The Raiders are your son, and you're harder on them than you would be anything else, because you know
I care a lot more.
Them to succeed. Yeah.
And the thing is, too, is, and I said this, you know, I don't know how long ago, but commitment to excellence means something to me, especially with the teams that I love. And if you're going to have that moniker, commitment to excellence, and your moves and your play and what you're willing to accept as a fan is not excellence, that pisses me off too. I'm not going to be that guy like Juan from West Covina that called into the ESPN show and called Jalen Hurts the next Michael Vick. It's like, dude, I'm not going to be that blind to make these stupid statements. There are some great things about this team. There's some things that we talked about today that need to be improved. And I'm just going to go ahead and try to be as objective as possible. But I'm always going to be a Raider fan and side with the Raiders.
We need to do a positivity moment with Juan Soto every show. Like, we're gonna force you. We're gonna force you for like 60
positive seconds affirmations.
Yeah. I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and god darn it.
The Raiders people like me.
The Raiders are good enough, the Raiders are smart enough,
and Raider Nation
likes
people
me. Like Raider Nation. We'll do that for 60 seconds. We're gonna force you to say nice things about the Raiders. But until that happens, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you, Sanjeet, for joining us. Thank you so much for listening. Don't be afraid to check us out on YouTube for a lot of extra content. That's where we put all our extra stuff there. And all the social medias as well. Until next time, later.